Keeping it on CliffCentral.com.
Black life is not a color, it's a lifestyle on CliffCentral.com.
Yeah, welcome to it. My name is Tamisha Masha, and of course, you're listening to Black Life only on Cliff Central. And you know, we do this every single Thursday from 11 to 12 o'clock. Woo! Today has been a major day for like things happening in the news. Oscar is going back to jail, and basically, he has been sentenced by the appeal court to murder, which I always foresaw coming. In the studio today with me, we're going to be talking. I've got Duncan, and then I'm going to say we're going to be talking about a number of things. We're going to be talking about this judgment that's come through from the appeal court, as well as the fact that Heineke Meyer has quit, which for me means it's going to be a happy Christmas. And talking about Christmas, ki December, boss. I know we all like to spend in December. I'm trying not to, but yo, I can already feel it. I'm like, I want to buy cases and cases of things and bring people to the house and have a pool party, but I don't want to have a black Christmas. I just want to have a good one, you know. And black not meaning that like I'm not going to invite my relatives over, just the fact that like I don't want it to be dark and not cool. Okay, but anyway, I've got Duncan with me. What's up?
Hey man, I've always wanted to be on this show. I'm so happy.
Thanks for coming on the show. Unfortunately, Mona obviously couldn't join us today. He's got some SARS issues, so he's out there at SARS. I think he's got some tax issues.
I'll be Mona busy for the day and interrupt you when you're talking. Yeah. Derail you when you're talking about something serious. Yeah. I'll just be
like,
that make guy.
Like really silly comments and like not really add to the conversation. Okay, you can be that guy. Yeah. It can't be very hard though. Yeah. Okay, but like Oscar has just been convicted of murder, dude.
I know, it's sad, but it's also sad that half of South Africa wants to see a crippled person suffer some more. I mean, he did what he did, and that was last year. I wouldn't say most people have moved on, but we've all concluded that River's now gone, and we are sorry for what happened.
That's a bullshit, like, statement you just made there. I'm sorry, Duncan. Really? I gotta just say it like it is. Like, it's sad that what a crippled person, blah, blah, blah. First of all, you used the wrong term. You can't call someone crippled.
It's black life. We don't know how to call terms.
What is it? Like, croco, croco.
Yeah, croco.
He's disabled. Yeah, okay? He's disabled. But he has proven that his disability has not stopped him from being an international world-class athlete and overcoming so many other things. True. So by that fact alone, that is where his disability stops right there. He has a point, and I think this was brought out that was important about this particular conviction with the appeal court. What they said was, actually, we have to look at the process of the law when it comes to the term dolus eventualis. All right, now dolus is basically when somebody has died. No. So it's murder. Now we have to understand when it comes to eventualis and why this is so important. If this had stood as it was, the next time I come to your house and I hear a sound in your bathroom, even if it's you, and I shoot through the bathroom and you die, I'm not going to jail. Even though I should have known that shooting through a bathroom door could end up killing somebody.
Dumisha, what you're failing to do here is put yourself in Oscar's shoes. So what you should do here...
I'm putting myself in Oscar's
shoes. Anyway, listen, you're a man, you've been in love before.
I'm in love.
You are in love.
I'm still in love.
Do you imagine yourself shooting through a bathroom door 4 times... shooting at your lover? Can you imagine yourself doing that?
No, man, I can't do that. Like, I'd rather
he didn't
like,
do it.
I'd rather like leave, you know what I'm saying? But the thing is, right, it's not about whether he shot Reva, okay? And that's where people get it wrong, because that's why this is so important for us to have gone through the appeal court. His defense was, I shouldn't be tried of murder because I didn't know I was shooting Reva. I just thought I was shooting a person. The fact is, what is murder? When you kill someone with intention to kill, right? That is it. If you kill someone by mistake, then it's basically what he got before, which is basically what is the term that judgment
culpable homicide,
yeah. Right, but if you kill someone with intent, then you committed murder. Now we have to go to that. What is intent? It basically means you could foresee that Duncan was gonna die if I threw this heavy cell phone at his head, and it could end up fatally wounding him so that he could die. So I probably should not throw the cell phone at his head. So the whole defense was about Oscar saying, no, the thing is, I didn't know it was Reva. But the fact of the matter is, he knew there was a person behind the door. And then from there, he said that, and that's what the judge said as well today, that he had so many different defenses and he had so many contradicting stories. He said he feared for his life, right? Okay, let's forget that he thought Reva was in the bed. He feared for his life. What made him fear for his life? He just heard a noise. okay, if you are going to fear for your life and you're going to defend yourself, you're allowed to do that. If you attack me, Duncan, you're a big guy, but we're about the same size. The law would say, why did you stab Duncan or shoot him if you're about the same size when you could have tried to subdue him hand to hand? Now, but Duncan knows kung fu. Okay, so you hit him with a stick or you went straight to shooting his head, shooting him in the head. Why did you not process it? You know what I mean? You can't just go from, Duncan knows kung fu, so I'm going to throw a hand grenade
just
at him.
Shoot.
Just shoot, right? Mm. You have to prove that you actually posed a real threat to my life. So if Duncan is behind the door, he hasn't said he's going to come beat me up. Like, you know, if Duncan hasn't said, I'm going to come fuck you up, nigga, right? You haven't said that. But because the other day, you might have inferred, you might have told Kat that one of these days, I'm going to kick Dimisha's ass. And today I'm thinking, I wake up in the middle of the night and think, Duncan's here tonight. I'm not sure.
He's
going to kick my ass. Yeah. I just heard a noise in the bathroom. He didn't say that right now. I can't just shoot you. You understand what I'm saying here? I'm not in immediate danger. Plus, on top of that, you have to fire a warning shot if you have a gun. So Oscar says, I didn't fire a warning shot because I was afraid the ricochet might have harmed me. Which means at that point you were thinking, you were not overcome by fear to that extent that you were just like, I don't know what happened. Because that's what he said as well. He was like, I just got there, I heard a noise, I just shot. And then he says, when they asked, why didn't you fire a warning shot? He said, but I thought if I fired a warning shot, I might kill myself or hurt myself. That means you had a moment to think about, if I shoot 4 shots into this door with Black Talon ammunition, I'm going to kill somebody. That guy must just go straight to jail. You know what I mean? Like, I'm sorry. We need to learn in this country that, look, yes, we are afraid. Yes, there is serious crime. If you're going to buy a gun, though, you need to really, really, really understand the laws of the country when it comes to owning guns and owning them responsibly. Otherwise, we end up probably like America, where 14 people were shot in California just like 2 nights ago.
This just happened randomly.
This just happened now, dude. Now. Every other week, we're hearing people getting shot in America, right? But you're allowed to just get a gun. 10 days.
More Black people, though, are being shot.
Well, I don't know if it's more Black people, to be honest. But a lot of Black people do get shot by the police in America. But Americans themselves just shoot each other, Black or white.
I don't know how it happens where someone can just walk inside the cinema and start shooting randomly at people.
Yeah, you see, that's just not cool. But, you know, that's very close to, like, what I must say. Like, Oscar, come on, my guy. Like, we couldn't, like, take you seriously from day one when you were talking about the whole way it happened. You know, we all kind of felt like, didn't you feel like there was something there that was just, like, dodgy?
Yeah, look, the one moment for me that was just screamed dodginess was him just pointing the gun at the door. And obviously, if Reva was inside the bathroom, she would have yelled and he would have heard the screams and said, oh, okay, no, it's just Reva in the bathroom.
But let's go back to the facts of the case, right? You have a lover. You have someone that you're in love with. A woman that you love. Your partner. The woman that you'd love to get married to, right? You guys live together.
Yeah.
All right. Now, which side of the bed do you sleep? By the door side or by the window side?
By the door side.
All right, cool. Why?
I feel like if someone jumps in,
first line of defense, right?
Yeah.
Like, you get shot first.
Yeah.
You give her a chance to, like, get out the window or something. Like, fair enough. So you are trying to defend her as a man should. Now, let's rewind that a little bit. You hear a funny noise downstairs or outside if you don't have a double story. Doesn't matter. What do you tell your woman? The first thing you do, in fact, before what you tell your woman, the first thing you do is make sure that your woman is
safe. Tell her to take cover.
Well, first of all, in the bed with you, right?
Yeah.
Or in the bedroom, right? To make sure that you it's not her going for a midnight snack, for example, right? Because you can't be living a life just under paranoia. Number one. So Oscar says he just ran out and he didn't even notice whether Reva was there or not. Okay, we'll let that slide. But actually, I know as a man, the first thing that you want to do is be like, babe, where are you? What's happening? Come over here. Listen, lock yourself in the bathroom door or lock yourself in the bathroom. I'm going downstairs to check. Or I'm going outside to check. Don't open until you hear my voice when I come back. If you don't hear my voice, make a call. Make sure the police are here because I'm probably dead. I've been stabbed or shot. Right? Mm. That's what you would do if you are like, I'm a man who wants to defend my wife. If you're a bit scared yourself, you'd be like, listen, let's go both hide in the bathroom and lock the door and call somebody. Which is probably the best way because she doesn't want to be like a widow, right? She wants like to live the rest of her life with you.
Of course.
Fair enough. Oscar didn't do that. He didn't do that. Now, number two, let's say you forgot to check, but you have a gun and you heard the noise and you're a bit of a Rambo type. And you hear a noise in a very small toilet, because Oscar knew how small his toilet was. I'm sure he takes a crap in there every
takes
single
his
day.
Like feet off in there.
Twice, maybe three times a day, he's in there taking a shit, you know. Yeah. He was a very healthy individual. So, you know, his stomach is working properly. He's not, like, constipated. He knows exactly how small that toilet is. I'm actually surprised there were no books in that toilet, first of all. Like, clearly Oscar didn't read books, because he should have read books in the toilet. You know what I mean? But that's beside the point.
Yeah.
The fact of the matter is, you don't even call out to say, hey, who's behind the door? If you're so afraid of being in danger, you know what I mean? Because the other person doesn't know where you are. Like, you could have gone to the side and said, who's in there? Before he started shooting. The fact of the matter is that he shot. And number three, Reva was wearing a full tracksuit on Valentine's night, my man. A full tracksuit with both her phones in the toilet. Like, I don't know about you, man. And I've been married long enough to know that after a while, these things go down. All right, cool. We got Tepa on the line. We're going to talk to Tepa just now. I know for a fact that, you know, you don't always have sex every Valentine's Day, you know.
But what? You don't?
No, I've been married for a lot. But these guys were in love for like a couple of months. This is 9 months. You are banging all the time. There's no way your girl's going to go sleep in a full tracksuit and take both her cell phones to the toilet and lock the door.
What could have been the big fight? That's the question.
Ohat. Francois Ohat, my man. Telling you right now. All right, we got Tepa on the line. Let's talk to Tepa. Hello, Tepa. How are you doing?
Hey, all right, and you?
I'm good, man. What you want to talk to us about today?
Are you guys really, really talking about Reva, or are you guys now playing law? Because what I want to know is, I mean, we all know Oscar is guilty, but what is your guys' take on, you know, if women's man's abused and they give a guy 10 months for killing a woman, basically?
Well, basically, we're about to get into that, you know, Tepa. We were just like discussing the merits of the case in the first place, saying, okay, even if Oscar was not abusive, was not trying to kill Reva, as he allegedly said, right? We're saying there was somebody, a person behind that bathroom door, and he shouldn't have fired four shots into a locked bathroom cubicle. Now, if you take that aside, and then, because at the moment, none of us actually know what really happened between Oscar and Reva. I think we've lost our caller, Tepa, but that's okay. So none of us really know what happened between Oscar and Reva that night. We don't know if they actually had a fight or they didn't. If they did have a fight, that makes it even worse that the man would go to such an... I mean, I don't care what you're fighting. I can't even imagine.
Nothing justifies murder.
What can you possibly fight about that you would get so angry at your girlfriend? I'm not even talking about your wife with four kids, and if you divorce, you're going to have to pay alimony. That's not even an excuse either. But what I'm saying is, like, there was still supposed to be a romantic couple. I don't care how much you love, like, Reva and how insecure you are. What is it that you're fighting about that's so bad that could make a man shoot his girlfriend four times? That's just crazy.
I can't imagine what the whole big fuss was about. But I think we worked quite closely with a lady that knew Reva here at the office. Her name is Kat, and I just want to find out what she thinks about
this. I'd love to know what she thinks about that, and maybe take us in a direction that can make us really think deeply about this, have some introspection. Because, like, yeah, a person did die, and it was Reva, and her family and her friends are very saddened by it. Hey, Kat, how you doing?
What's up?
So how did you know Reva?
We did a TV show together called Tropical Island of Treasure.
Were you on that show?
Yes, I was. I did Jamaica.
Oh, wow. Okay. And after you did the show, how long did you know after that? Did you guys like keep in touch and that sort of thing?
Yeah, everyone, well, the entire cast kept in touch.
Okay, but she seems to be somebody who a lot of people who either met her once off on the show, like yourself, or at some other time, they always kept in touch with her. Was she like a really friendly person?
Yeah, she was just that type of person. Like, I guess you instantly fall in love with her when you meet her. We were actually with her a week exactly before she died, 7 days.
Okay. Did she talk about Oscar? Did she like, was she on some, you know, my man this, my man that, my man loves me?
She was actually trying to keep it a secret.
But we all knew by then. We saw her the year before at the Sports Awards with Oscar.
Yeah, well, I didn't know that because I don't watch sports or whatever.
All right.
But I saw her talking to some people at an event we were at about him, but she was kind of shy and whatever. So okay.
She wasn't really
talking about it openly.
Yeah. But did she seem like she was in love at all? You know, did she have that glow? You don't know for sure.
Yeah, I don't know what that looks like.
All right, but then let's talk about what's happened today at the appeal court in Bloemfontein. As someone who knew her, I mean, obviously there was a connection, you know. Mm. Did you feel embittered by the first conviction and the first sentence?
What is embittered?
Just think of the word bitter, ne? And then put M before it. So you were bitter, you were made bitter, M bittered.
Yes, of course.
Yeah. I was
like, yeah, I mean, initially I was expecting like 20 something years, and then he only got 5 and then only served 11 or 12 months. And yeah, I was like, this is bullshit.
Okay.
But when I heard what happened today, I was like, best news ever.
Yeah, yeah. Like justice actually did prevail.
Yeah.
How important do you think this is? You know, Tepo was saying, you know, with Women's Month having come up and just general, you know, the state of our nation and people thinking they can take the law into their own hands, mm-hmm, and women and child abuse. How important do you think a sentence like this is in deterring that sort of thing?
It kind of gives me hope that maybe there is like
justice.
Yeah, our justice system
kind of does work.
Is working, Nyana.
I must say, it kind of gives me hope as well, because after this happened, I was like, look, you may as well just take it to the streets, you know? Like, if someone murders your sister or your cousin or your brother or someone, like, why bother going to the courts if that's the kind of decisions that are handed down? Like,
and you Oscar has money, so then you think, did he pay anyone?
Mm-hmm.
Like, besides... Who was representing him?
Here's an important question that I always wanted to ask the ladies, but I never got to ask them, especially on air. The fact that the judge was a woman, Judge Masipa, and an older lady who herself has children and probably daughters and, or has nieces and so on and so forth. How did you feel about a woman handing down a judgment like that, especially a black woman who has probably been around abuse or been abused herself?
Yeah, she kind of disappointed me, because when we first found out she was going to be handling the case, they were like, yeah, she doesn't take nonsense and she's very strong against women abuse and blah, blah, blah. And then she handed down that sentence. And
she handed
down
a Mickey Mouse sentence.
What happened?
Yeah.
And then I'm like, but how does she sleep at night?
Yeah. Yeah. I also thought that, I must say, I was like really disappointed with that. Even if, right, she was trying to be lenient because of the circumstances and so on and so forth. The fact of the matter is sometimes like the punishment must fit the crime, which is like, actually a woman did die, a woman in her prime who was about to blow up, you know?
True.
I mean, as much as Reva had blown up as a model and everything else, she was a lawyer and she was going places and she was loved, not only by her family and friends, but by many other people as well. And the fact of the matter is a message, I know that you can't just say a message has to be sent about women abuse and that sort of thing, but a message has to be sent.
Yeah.
There, I've said it.
Which it wasn't. Her message wasn't, was, right? Well, I kind of feel sorry for him. He's a double entity, like, so... Yeah.
After that, I was like, look, if Oscar can shoot a woman, a hot, blonde, white woman, 4 times, I can slap you, black girl, every day. What you gonna do? Take me to Judge Masipa. Yeah, tell her I slapped you. Tell her... You know what I mean? Like,
if that had been anybody else, like, what's the story with the cops who dragged that guy behind the car and he died?
Yeah.
Didn't they get 15 years each?
Yeah, they did.
15,
yeah.
30 years.
Yeah, they,
because it's Oscar.
They didn't have money.
But also,
bottom line.
But also, maybe Judge Masipa was like a little bit nervous because
it's white people.
Like, the whole world was watching, you know, like, and they're like, and she was like, I'm not used to being on TV, because it's hard to be on TV. People, you know. I've been TV a long time.
The whole world was watching, but then she handed down the sentence that didn't make sense.
No, it didn't. Yo, Monobisi, I'm so glad you came. Did you sort out your child issues?
I don't want you to go to jail, guy.
I'll tell you something,
no. There's no dollars eventually.
You messed with SARS and you don't pay your taxes. Forget going to the appeal court. You would have been convicted the first time around to life
in
prison.
I actually just went to go do payment arrangements to say, hey, I can't afford to give you everything all at once. So I need to make a payment. So yeah, SARS people in Randburg, hey, shout out to you guys, man. If we had the horn, we'd be...
Yeah, but that's happened to me before, eh? SARS, before Christmas, like they want their
money. Man, what's up with that,
what's up with that, dude? Like, what are my children supposed to eat now?
Yeah.
And you know, for us who are like... You know, you don't have a corporate. Thank you, Kat, by the way, for that chat. We're gonna move on.
Yeah,
just
bye.
Like that. For some of us who don't have like regular jobs, like 9 to 5s, you know, January and February are two major months that are
January.
Tough. No, the January and February. Like you start recovering around about March. So
that's
when you forget your
January. We worry in Jan.
It's not
Gen Y.
I think we must have someone from SARS come in here one of these days.
Yeah.
And really explain to us, like, why is it that it's so easy to get, like, the middle class people, you know?
In debt so much.
That's why I say, you know what? Me, I'd rather be, I, in fact, I don't want, being poor is not an option, but I'm going to be rich just so that I can avoid this crap. Because
just so you can pay SARS.
No, because I don't have to pay SARS. You see, it's biblical.
They said, give to Caesar what belongs to Caesar. Huh?
Yeah. I'll give them what belongs to Caesar, but I reckon if you're middle class, you actually get taxed more.
Yeah.
And you feel it more.
Okay, let's go to ads.
Not cool.
Peter Turin presents the glorious musical comedy Singing in the Rain. Direct from a sellout London West End season, this five-star production will leave you with a song in your heart and a smile on your face, with spectacular dancing and raining live on stage. Singing in the Rain showers you with everything you could wish for in a hit musical. At Monte Cassino from January 15 until March 13. Singing in the Rain. Book now.
Keeping it on CliffCentral.com.
Black life is not a color, it's a lifestyle. On CliffCentral.com.
Yeah. You're going to F up some dollars, man. Yo, my guy.
Yeah,
you know about like MTN, right? Nigeria finding them $5.2 billion.
Yeah, no.
Okay,
don't even convert to rands because we were fighting off air.
Like, what is
trying to read Jacob Zuma's numbers
dollars
here.
In rands? I don't even know.
Yeah, no.
But they've slashed it down, you know, to $3.4 billion.
But is that palatable? Huh?
Yeah, palatable or not? Like, they had 5 million SIM cards that were illegal, guy. Like, we just gotta go there. Like, we just gotta be like honest about it. Like, if they had 500,000, if they had 50,000, if they had 5,000 unrecured SIM cards, I'd be like, ah, but guys, this is excessive. 5 million. How do you not see that?
It was a mistake. But we all make mistakes.
No, but let's be honest. Who takes Nigeria seriously? I mean, if I'm going to take my business to Nigeria, I'm taking my business to Nigeria because I know a lot of things will be done underhand.
Underhand.
It sucks when you get busted. Okay.
Yeah, who gets Duncan busted in
do
like,
not represent
yes.
Black life.
No, they don't.
Dumisho, Masha, or
we don't know Duncan.
Anyway.
Who's Duncan?
My brothers from Nigeria. I do not agree with this man about Nigeria at all.
I don't know this ogre.
I don't know this ogre. But basically, like, whether it was in Nigeria, whether it was in South Africa, wherever it was, like even if there is corruption where you're going, why are you also going to be corrupt? And then be like, but why are you going to find me now that I'm caught? No, guys, you know what's happening. I gotta put it out there right now. What's happened nowadays is that we've gotten to a point where we've just become so loose with our morals that some of these things they're just morals. We're making stupid mistakes.
You're assuming we had morals to begin
with. No, I think we had morals to begin. No, we did. No, I think growing up
morals are worse.
I definitely knew a sense. I had a sense of what was right and what was wrong. You don't steal, you don't lie, you don't do that, and you try to live up to that. I feel like nowadays I'm even like so reckless. I don't even have that conscience to say, hey, my guy, you know, you're lying. It's like, so what?
Dude, I mean, if our president...
Especially when it comes to business.
If our president's setting bad examples with lying, corrupting, who are we as the normal people of the country?
Those facts have not been proven.
No, but we all know that's true. Come
no, but how do we know that it's true? Those facts have
BC, I think this guy is part of the ANC membership. What do you think?
You're alleging right now. You are making very strong allegations, comrade.
Point
which
of order,
are baseless
point of order.
On a point of fact, comrade. Because, as you know, that case was sub judice. Mm. And it was never brought to the light of day through a judicial process. Mm. So we cannot now go back and assume that we know whether the president was corrupt or not. Thank you.
Anyway,
Honorable Monabis.
Yeah, no, I think Dumisha is living on another planet. You see, he's gone from moral to speculative.
No, hang on.
Those things, if there's another president that comes in, he's going to serve, guaranteed, which is why it's important for a president to make sure that whoever comes in after him.
That's happening right now.
Those things are dropped.
And I hope someone important was listening to what I just said now, because not only can I spot read and I can do great speeches, you know, I can even enact them with the right emotion. Forget Barack Obama. I can do that better than Barack. And I feel like pretty good in a suit. So if you want the next president, call on me. I promise you we'll not take away your tenders. We will not change anything. I just want a house the same value as in Kandla. Not the same architect though. I will be using someone else. I don't want like a 250 million rand. I don't want to be balling on some rondavels. You know what I'm saying? That's one thing I didn't get.
No,
like,
but it's
if you're gonna ball.
It's traditional.
But it could have been nice traditional. That was like whack traditional.
It's tragic.
What upsets you more? The fact that we have spent 240 million on his house, or that when you actually saw it, you were like, where, on what? What? Where's the money?
No,
go?
You know what upset me the most, I mean, about this whole thing, is that, you know, I'm still, they're still trying to figure out who was the,
it will never happen,
and so forth.
How and much money went to, I'm going to say this, the Mandela Foundation from the arms deal?
Let's not even go there. But the point I'm making is that if you're going to do something, do it well, man. You know, my big thing, you know, is, you know, Jacob was very strong for the ANC with regards to, you know, intelligence.
He was smart.
You know?
He like
so now
those,
I'm questioning whether is our intelligence in safe hands, because that's the place he grew up in. That's his stronghold. And I'm worried about our intelligence. You know, why? FIFA's now arrested people again, over 100 officials. FIFA officials were arrested today. Yeah, it's all over the news.
For what now? What do they do?
Well, they keep tracking them down.
Are they? None of them are from South Africa, I hope. Please, God, just this one time.
Dr. Jordan is still out, so no.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Hey, politics is rough, man.
You know what? Money is rough, guys. Like, you know, like Black Friday happened last week, right?
Mm.
So Black Friday.
What's up with that?
It's not an African concept. It's not an African concept.
Yes.
Black people like things, guys, you know.
Because, you know, Duncan was saying, like, Black Friday, when it originally
15%
started.
15% off.
When it originally started, it was, you know, you half price on the slaves, right, on Fridays. So now we bring it here. It's like, now we're going to enslave these Africans again.
No,
we were
slaves when we left our own country. Now we're showing that we're still in a slavery mentality.
Exactly, my guy.
We're showing.
Like, 15%, you go and form a queue. 15%!
Yeah, no.
Off!
Yeah, no. Not even, you know.
What
if,
is it
if
that you
look
couldn't
at
live
the
without?
History of the Black Friday and what it represented. I mean, I spoke to a lot of my American friends. Yeah, I got American friends.
So do I, dude.
And like, the big thing...
Some of my best friends are American.
Some of my best friends are American. Like, you know? Yeah. So, the big thing is, like, they're like 20%, 30%. What's going on here? Black Friday was meant to be like 80% off, 90%, you know?
At least 50, guys. At least give us like, okay, 14 yana.
And then we will go and adopt it.
My thing is like the connotations of it. Like, that does, like, actually, like, that is an outrage.
Yeah.
You can't, like, bring that here. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, you just can't. Like, we can't be cool with that. Like, I'm not cool.
Yeah,
I am not cool.
Yeah, well, luckily we've got Christopher Gilmer coming through.
I hope
who's an investment analyst to actually, you know, unpack this thing for us, because, you know,
but my thing is, we keep
maybe
making the
we're
same
qualifying
mistakes,
everything.
Okay, let's just even forget about calling it Black Friday or whatever, right?
Yeah,
it's December time, right? Get December, boss.
Sure,
and I know if I've got like 5 rand, it's cutting a hole in my pocket because I want to do something with it and celebrate. We do that every single year, and I do it too. I'm guilty, but I know better. I just don't always do better. Why, Duncan? Why?
You know, money is meant to be enjoyed, really. You know, you get money, you spend money. When it finishes, you go out there and you make more money.
Why can't we just hold on to it?
No, money makes me happy, to make sure. Money makes you happy.
Money doesn't make me happy. Look, I'm already happy.
The things that money can get
you. I just like
you.
Spending money, though.
Yeah.
I enjoy spending money. That doesn't mean money makes me happy. Okay? And that's the thing, right? Once you make a statement like in your life, in your own place, in your own heart, like money makes me happy, then inevitably what you're going to end up doing is spending recklessly, and you're never going to be happy because money is like a mirage, man.
No, Timisha, you're missing my point. You get money, you spend money. It finishes, you go out there and you make more money.
Why
that's the circle
make
of money.
And then save money or invest money and get to a point where your money is making money for you. Your money is working when you're sleeping, when you're on holiday, all types of things. As opposed to just spending money. Because if you just spend money all the time and you're just a consumer like people are doing now, you're always going to be a slave to money. And that's not a good place. You don't want to be a slave to anything.
Yeah, well, I think
next thing we will be selling you off.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
How Black Friday
and it's one of those things where we kind of saying, Are we slaves of money or are we slaves of work and work ethics?
We're slaves of money because we're not spending our money properly, so we don't have enough of it. And then we have to keep going out there to work, not because we're fulfilled or we enjoy our jobs, yeah, but just because you got to pay those bills.
Yeah, yeah.
And we got to pay our debts.
Well, I think let's hear from the pros because we can go on about street hustle.
We want corporate. Their money. Yeah, we want their money.
Good. Is it afternoon? Oh, it's still good morning. Good morning.
Good morning.
Mr. Christopher Gilmore.
We want the money, Christopher. We want the
Is that ever going to work, though?
Yeah, Christopher doesn't know what he's gotten himself into
no,
yet.
No, I don't, hey.
Yeah, no.
How are you doing, by the way?
Good, thanks. And yourself?
I'm good. Thank you for joining us today. We're talking about, you know,
money.
Unbridled spending. And, you know, you're a professional in this. You're the expert. We're just talking. We're just shooting the breeze, right?
Yeah, you know best. So he can formalize what we are spewing out.
Last week, a phenomenon that is not South African, it's American, called Black Friday, happened in South Africa. And a lot of people went out there and spent money that sometimes we believe they don't really have. What are your views on that? Why did this happen in this country now suddenly?
Okay, let's go back a little step. South Africa is and always has been a nation of spenders. We don't really save very much, other than what we call contractual saving. Now, by that, I mean things like pension funds and this type of thing. And in that score, we're actually very high in the World League. But when it comes to discretionary spending, we just spend an awful lot and have done for many, many decades. Nothing's changed. So get money, you get a new job, you get a bonus, whatever, you go out there and you blow it. And that's fine, and you're enjoying it. But you know what? There's a day of reckoning coming at some point in time. Next year, we're going to see higher interest rates.
Oh, I'm so scared.
Don't say that.
So, we've already started. The governor of the Reserve Bank 2 weeks ago, Lisecha, he actually said, we've got to start being a bit more responsible.
Right.
Although that's not a bad thing, guys. But it's not always a bad thing.
They just snuck in that 25 bonus points.
Basis points. But the thing is, in terms of investments, if you're trying to make money from investments, it's not a bad thing that interest rates are going up because you don't want them too low, right? Because then your interest score is going to be low on your investment.
Well, again, it depends what you mean by investments. If you're talking about fixed interest, and for people who are living on fixed interest and they're looking for an income from interest-bearing securities, that's fine, and you're quite right. However, if you're a manufacturing concern, for example, and you need to borrow to expand, it's bad for you. So, it's all kind of swings and roundabouts. Mm. And in the equity market, in the share market, you'll find there's an inverse correlation between interest rates and the level of the share market. We're at 30, 35, 40-year lows as far as interest rates are concerned in South Africa. In the UK, they're at 300-year lows. In the US, also at multi-decade lows. Mm-hmm. So that has promoted the cult of the equity, people buying shares. As we start seeing interest rates rising around the world and including in South Africa, it means the likelihood is people are going to start going for less risky investments, i.e. interest-bearing investments, and away from equities. So
give us an example of one, Chris.
Give
us an example of like equities.
Okay, equities, these are the shares that are listed on the Johannesburg Stock Exchange. Mm-hmm. So companies like SAB Miller, not for much longer, unfortunately, because they got bought out by AB InBev.
Did that deal go through?
It went through.
Did that deal actually go through?
The deal has gone through. It will only be consummated in the second half of next year.
Okay.
But it's a huge deal. One of the biggest deals in history. $106 billion. Yeah. Massive. I mean, South African Breweries, probably the best company that South Africa has ever produced.
I wish I had bought shares when I was like 5 years old. But I didn't have the money then.
And you didn't know what shares were. So let's just keep that.
My pocket money just wasn't stretching that far. No. But I wish I had because I don't know what I'd be doing.
You wouldn't be here.
I would be here, but like I'd be...
You wouldn't be here.
I would like have treated you guys to a couple of drinks. I would have treated you to some beers.
Oh, thanks. Thanks, Dimisha.
We were still... Christopher, you're still telling us about equity. So you were saying.
Okay. So SAB, we talk about things like British American Tobacco. I think I'm concentrating all the sin stocks here. Sun International, Sogo Sun, Old Mutual, mm-hmm. Sunlum. All of these companies are listed on the stock exchange and their shares trade. So ordinary individuals, large financial institutions, they buy and sell them. And, we're now looking today at a market which is very, very high indeed. It's out of the actual figure we use on the Johannesburg Stock Exchange, the All Share Index. It's around about 53,000, 54,000. That's a measure of expensiveness.
Right.
The other measure of expensiveness is to talk about the price-earnings ratio, the price of a company or the price of an index relative to its underlying earnings. And today we're at one of the highest levels we've ever seen. So it's expensive.
Is that a good thing or a bad thing? I'm not sure
just about to,
what to make of that.
Chris just lost me. It depends
it depends on your perspective. Let's say you bought into the market across the board 10, 15 years ago. At these levels, it's a fantastic thing for you. It's brilliant. You've done incredibly well.
Mm-hmm.
But by on the other side of the coin, if you're now Joe Public, you're thinking of going and buying at the market. It's expensive now, and you're thinking, well, you know, it's such rarefied levels. Is it going to have a come off? It probably isn't, and mainly because there's so much cheap money sloshing around the world, and has been ever since the end of the global financial crisis.
But here's the thing, right? You're talking about the end of the global financial crisis. All economic systems or economies, as you say, they go in cycles. So, you know, whether we're down now or we're up, if you have an up, a down is going to come. If you have a down, an up is soon to follow as well. Maybe not soon, but it will at some point. The idea of buying shares is basically buy low and sell high.
Yes.
So right now is not a good time to be buying.
Quite right.
It's a good time to be selling.
Well, you know,
if you're going to sell.
No, if we were living in what I would call normal circumstances, you're quite right. But unfortunately, the picture is skewed. It's distorted very badly by all of that cheap money to which I referred. You know, so if you say to yourself, it's maybe time to sell, against that argument is the fact that there's so much cheap money sloshing around the world and in South Africa. You know, for example, a number of people have talked recently about how much money corporates are sitting on in South Africa, somewhere between 500 billion and a trillion rands. It's a huge figure.
And how much are they sending out of the money of the country as well?
That's, again, a very, very good question. A lot of companies are investing heavily in the rest of Africa. You know, and the Reserve Bank has made it much easier for them to do that, and that's great. And the returns they get in years to come will be fantastic.
Okay. And it's dollar-based economies.
There. Absolutely.
As long as, though, they don't just send it off to a Swiss bank account somewhere because they've registered a company in Switzerland. Like, Sasol has done that. We know that for a fact.
Well,
even MTN sends some of it. And a lot of the mining concerns send their money out of the country as well.
Yeah. Look, as you say, as long as it's for productive purposes, then I think it's to be welcomed. And the Reserve Bank has realized that over a number of years and has encouraged companies to do that. So pretty much there's no limit to what you can do in terms of investing in the rest of Africa. And, you know, there are some tremendous opportunities there. It's a difficult place in which to do business. You know, it's not the easiest.
Ask MTN about that.
$3.4 billion fine. Absolutely. Yeah.
But they've been doing very well. Yeah. So I think they've got that somewhere, you know, hidden, locked up in a safe.
Without the CEO, though. I think they'll do it without the CEO.
Well, he's back. Putiman Tlhako is back at
So they fire him and they bring him back.
No, they fired the other CEO because he was the one before, and then they got a new CEO, and then he got fired, and then Putuma came back.
That was Sifiso Dabengwa. So you've got Putuma, who was the chairman, and now he's become executive chairman, so he's come back into the fray.
Right.
And I mean, look, he was primarily responsible for creating this incredible empire all over the rest of Africa. Oh. So a phenomenal track record. And that's why I think they brought him back to try and... Look, he's been partially successful. You know, we got down from 5.2 billion to 3.4 billion. It's
cool. Something. 1.8 billion.
And they need to pay it before the end of the year.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Look, they've got the money. They've got the balance sheet. I mean, this is a beautifully constructed company.
They could just, like, use Putuma's shares. I mean, you know, apparently he's the third richest black man in South Africa. I think he's worth 5 billion rands or something or more. You know, so you should just sell your shares and pay off that shit.
Yeah.
but has that actually, the stock of MTN went down a bit, but it's bounced back again, hasn't it?
It has.
It's come back.
You see, I think a lot
not
of
quite
people,
the same levels.
I think a lot of people were assuming that they were going to get a really good deal. That in fact, this $5.2 billion fine was outrageous and there was no way they were going to pay anything like that.
Mm.
And that as a result, the share price was too low and you should buy it. Unfortunately, what we've got now is clarification on the matter. And at $3.4 billion, it's a big knock to them.
That's huge.
Rands. Did I say rands? It's dollars.
$3.4 billion.
I mean, that's huge. Multiply by 14, and
I
you're getting a massive huge
figure. Right now, I've got to write it down.
Yeah,
it's 50 billion rands. I mean,
don't write it for the president.
Okay, that's a bit less than I think what MultiChoice made in turnover last year.
Yeah,
I'm not sure.
That's another undercover animal there.
Naspers.
Yeah, Naspers is amazing. You know, if you think about it, we as South Africans, we see all of their advertising. You see things like DSTV. You see things like the printing operations. And you think, wow, this is a big business. It is nothing in comparison to Tencent in China.
That's just the tip of the iceberg. Right?
Well, in fact, if you do a valuation, you'll find that Tencent is so big that you're actually getting all of these other things for nothing. Literally. And this is big stuff, you know, in our world, you know.
But then it makes me wonder, why does then, like, a company like Naspers, which already owns so much, especially in the media field, go in and bring up a company like Showmax, which a lot of consumers don't know that you're basically what you're doing is
competing, if
you're
saying, against yourself.
I can't afford DSTV for whatever reason, or I don't want DSTV, I'm going to get Showmax. You're still buying DSTV without knowing. You know what I mean?
Yes, yeah.
But they're closing off the market to the new players who come into that video on demand market and become players in Africa and South Africa because they already have first rights on a lot of the major shows and films that were shown on DSTV.
Yeah. Yes. You've put your finger in it. Content is key. Now, if you haven't got content, you might as well not bother. I mean, you look at all those other companies that have been here, they've tried it, and they've they may still be there, but they're not really anywhere when it comes to DSTV. There is, I think, one vulnerability in the very long term for DSTV, and that is internet. Okay?
Yeah.
So, for example, if you live in America or Britain or in
Japan,
the UK,
let's say.
Or Japan, or in, you know, well, Korea, South Korea, and you've got access to cheap broadband and fast broadband. And when I buy fast broadband, I'm talking about things, speeds of 1 gigabyte per second. Okay?
That's just gigabyte crazy. Per second. I can't even imagine that.
No. Well, some of the new fiber that's going in by Vuma is of that speed.
Oh, yes, in South Africa? Yeah. I'm signing up. I need it because my internet is too slow.
Go and see Vuma. If you're living in the right neighborhood for $2.5 grand a month, you'll get 1 gigabit per second.
I don't mind. I'll pay.
Yeah, we're in Parkhurst, and it's good.
Parkhurst is phenomenal. They've gone their own way, and they got fiber to the home about a year or so
Parkhurst
ago.
Parkhurst did that phenomenal. For themselves.
Yeah, so we 20 down and 5 up.
So, I mean, that is, you can stream no problem at all. It's wonderful. It's a great experience.
Yeah.
So with that, what you can do, you can look at Netflix. You can change your URL. You can fool BBC iPlayer, Real Player, to thinking that you're in the UK. And you can watch all the BBC, not the stuff that you get here.
Right.
You can get all the stuff, all the time, real time. And it's phenomenal.
But that's still subscription-based, right?
No, it's for free.
No, it's free.
Oh, my that's goodness.
Free. That's why I say, in the very long term, it could be a threat. Not right now.
Yes, yes,
not
right. I suppose they've got to actually make hay, the proverbial hay while the sun shines.
Yeah.
Because sooner or later, I mean, what? The cost of premium DSTV subscription right now is just over 700, it's close to
800.
800 Rand?
780,
760. Wow, and you could get most of those shows for free, let's say in 5 years' time, they better have something else. However, do you think that maybe investing in local content more might actually save them in that way? Because then they can compete with the rest of the world.
Now, that's a double-edged sword. Yes, it can. You're quite right, because there's a huge demand for it.
They've got the reserves for it in terms of capital.
No doubt about it. But you just go and ask the guys at SABC, for example, the cost of putting on local productions. It is enormous.
I have no doubt. You know, I'm in production.
I'm preaching to the converted. Yeah. So if your choice is local content, no matter how good it is, no matter what the attraction is going to be, if it's going to cost you 10 or 15 or 20 times what I can get compared
licensing
to some cheap American stuff, no. I don't mean disparaging to the Americans, but you know, that's your choice. And there's so much of that cheap American content out there, you can get it off the shelf literally.
But here's the thing though, Christopher, and this is what we're not talking about, and I love that debate. But the American content is only sold cheaply because it's syndicated around the world.
Yes.
For them to make it, it's hundreds of millions of dollars per show.
Yeah, but they recover it.
But the way they recover it is they've set up a distribution network around the world that makes it cheaper per unit per country.
I mean, look at James Bond. James Bond is a record high in history, in film history.
Yeah? What did they
box
make?
Box office.
What did they make
first
box
week.
Office?
I'll tell you now. Right. Yeah,
but basically, right, they made a lot of money from it, right? But they cost a lot of money to make it.
Yeah.
My point is, it's to get that sort of buy-in from the whole world, you need to spend money and then spend it consistently for a while until you get to a point where the whole world is ready to buy whatever it is that you're producing, even at what they might feel is relatively low compared to what it would cost them to produce their own.
Yes.
But because you're dealing with so many markets, you're dealing with volumes, basically, you can afford to sell at a cheaper price. South Africa, when we make local content, we're selling to lower volume. So basically, it's like making a bespoke suit instead of a suit that's off the rack.
Yes.
But until we can get to a point where we're making the kind of quality that the world demands and wants more of, then we'll always have that push and pull, I guess, of what's the chicken and the egg? Do we start by putting the money and the investment in first, or do we continue as is and hope that one day the dominance, especially of the American market, doesn't get to a point where they can just say tomorrow, actually, what you bought the show for last year, we're gonna take it up by five times, take it or leave it, because
No, you're spot on. We do have a little bit of a springboard in the sense that there have been some local successes in the film industry, particularly things like, what was it called, District 9, about the big prawns and stuff like that.
Yes.
And a few other things over a number of decades, in fact. So it's not like we're operating completely in a vacuum. There is a kind of a knowledge that South Africa does produce some good stuff. But, you know, to be able to get that into the international market on a sustained basis is going to take a long, long time.
It is going to take a long time, and it's going to have to be like sustainable for many years, because obviously you want to create the market, you want to create the demand within the market and make that grow as years go on. But what do you think is the most difficult thing about, let's say, the formal, I'd say the banks, formal funders going out and funding things like film and television in South Africa? Because it's not something that the big banks or the big ordinary funders, if you can call it that, the ones that we're used to, actually are playing in.
Yeah, it is difficult. And look, banks and other financial institutions, they're all looking for a return on their investment.
Of course.
So if they're comfortable that the return's going to be that big, then they'll go for it. I mean, if they see the opportunity. Allied to that, and if you go back into the 70s and 80s in South Africa, there was a big move to do this. Maybe it was the old apartheid government. They were trying to push their ideas into the rest of the world. But they gave big tax breaks to a number of people. So you got a lot of funding of movies by that way. So it's not just necessarily the return on investment, because many of these movies that made were not really viable. But when you got the tax break, it looked an awful lot better.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
So I think there is still the tax break to say whatever you spend on film, I think you get
the profit for 10 years is tax-free. Yeah. Plus you get a 30% rebate on what you spent upfront. Yeah. But, you know, you're talking about films in the 80s. An interesting thing is a lot of those films were also money laundering operations, actually, where it didn't matter whether we finished shooting the film or not. Let's just pretend we made a movie, and because actually we got this money from illegal diamonds.
I mean, you know, something's concerning me, Chris. Like, we're heading now into silly season. Well, we are in silly season.
Yeah.
And obviously a lot of consumers spend a lot of money, i.e. black people buying Christmas clothes and all those things.
Christmas food
and all that.
I've got to impress the neighbors by buying my wife a Christmas car.
Anyway, on credit. Like,
I'll see how I pay it next year. It's okay, don't worry.
Like, how much do South Africans basically as a whole spend during the festive season? I mean, because year in, year out, it just seems to get worse.
Yeah. Well, that's what I was saying, coming back to my original point. South Africans are a nation of spenders rather than savers. Okay? So what we had last Friday, the so-called Black Friday. And do you know where the term Black Friday comes from?
Yeah. Let's not talk about it again.
It's when retailers come into the black. In other words, they make profits. It's a good thing. So it means that you've actually got to work 10 and a half months of the year or thereabouts to actually make money. The rest of the year, you're actually making losses. But you go into the black, as it's called. And so it's for about 2-3 years ago, Britain adopted it. Because Americans have been doing it for decades, and now we've done it, I think, really for
Americans have been doing it for centuries.
Yeah.
Because Black Friday was the Thanksgiving slave.
The Thanksgiving weekend.
Yeah. But I mean, you know.
So it's not a color thing. It's just.
No.
No.
It's if you're in the red, it means you're in losses. If you're in the black, it means you're in profits.
Okay. You
know? So it's basically saying you've got an opportunity. It's a marketing opportunity for the retailers to make an awful lot of money. But that's the question. I'm skeptical as to whether they've made an awful lot of money last Friday and
for Checkers. I mean, Checkers is probably the only one that can claim.
But Checkers makes money every month.
Well,
they don't need.
But they
one
did it. I mean, did you
December.
See the queues? People were. Did you guys see those videos?
I saw a Checkers out in Bryanston there, and I saw guys going with Buc-ee's, and they were getting 2-liter bottles of Coke in the PET, you know?
Yeah.
And they were selling those, for around about half price. You know, so those will be taken elsewhere, and they'll be sold on at a much, much higher price.
Mm.
So obviously, you're getting the things recycled,
right?
But you know, the question you have to ask is Checkers making any kind of reasonable profit on that? I'm not so sure they are.
What their
they're,
money?
They're getting the market share, and at this point in time, there's a big price war taking place between Pick n Pay and ShopRite.
Yeah.
So in terms of getting market share, I think it's good for them, but it's always got to be profitable market share. There's not really much point in buying something and selling something for 10 rands when it's actually costing you 15 rands, because you're actually going to be making a loss.
But here's the thing, right? How do they do it in America, where you go to America and when they have a sale, they're serious about it. Like things go down by
50%. 80%. I mean,
80%, those sort of things. And they're still making some money. I'm sure, you know, the markup is, I'm sure it's not when you started out. You know, when you go to a sale, that basically what you're buying is what it should have cost you in the first place, yes, before the crazy, yes, markup. How does America do it that every year, I mean, every time I go to America, they have sales for Nike sneakers that were made last year, right? And now they're selling them at half price. Whereas in South Africa, the same shoe for 5 years costs the same amount.
If anything, not going up. Yeah. I mean, yeah, Air Maxes go up. I mean, have you ever?
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, look, you put your finger a few moments ago. They have the economies of scale. They've got the size in the US.
Ah.
You're talking about a population of 350 million people.
Of spenders, by the way.
And they're wealthy. If you, yeah, look at income per capita, it's one of the highest in the world. Mm-hmm. So they've got the money. They can do it. Whereas here in South Africa, we're maybe 50, 60 million people. And, you know, we're a kind of middle income type of country. So we don't have the money. We don't have the population. Mm. So it's not, you don't really have the ability to actually, okay, do that kind of competitive pricing. But you're absolutely right. When you go to the UK, when you go to Europe, when you go to America, you see real sales. Now, I've been in South Africa for 33 years. One of the first things that hit me when I came here in the 80s was, there's no real sales here.
No,
you
no,
know,
no,
I mean,
no,
there's,
no,
we
pretend,
there's no sales,
coupons,
but they're not
there's
sales
no
at all.
Couponing, no. There's nothing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a bit of it from time to time. I think Woolies on the food side has been quite innovative in recent times. You know, buy three, pay
yes,
for two.
That's
thing.
Great.
Yeah.
You know, it's made it, it's made it affordable, yeah, if you're buying in bulk. But sometimes you're like, I don't need the third one. So I'm probably going to end up
wasting,
you know, it gets to the past the sell-by date, and then I'm probably going to have to throw it away. So that was kind of a waste. But it's a good initiative because there are larger families. So for your large family, then it works out. And
yes,
I don't know, you know, I've always said to myself, just as a consumer, every time I've gone to your ShopRite Checkers, and that's just my experience, I'm not disparaging ShopRite Checkers, every time I give them a chance, I'll buy a bunch of stuff. At least two or three items, something has already expired. And now the schlep of going back to the shop makes me think I'm not going back there again. Although it was cheaper than going to Woolworths, I at least know that everything in my trolley is most likely to be still fresh.
Yes, yes. Look, Woolies, I think, is in a different league to any other food retail in the country by a huge margin. There are a couple of Spars out there that get very close.
Spar is actually,
yeah,
they
but
said
it's more
the fastest growing retail.
Yeah, but it's more expensive, I
that's
think,
that's an
than
assumption.
Woolies.
Eh?
I've done the price check, my man. The same thing at Woolies is cheaper. I've done it. Like, you know those tack biscuits? Those,
look,
those
I mean,
tack crackers.
You know, Spar is actually probably one of the most profitable retailers at the moment, quietly so. So
especially in
regions and their footprint
outside of Johannesburg, like in Eastern Cape and that sort of thing.
Yeah, their footprint has also grown, you know.
Yeah.
So I mean, what are we to expect, you know, in terms of food costs and food
and this
prices?
Is our last question,
and this is our last question,
yeah,
because we always get kicked out.
Okay.
So what can we expect? 2016 is here.
Where's the silver lining? Where's the good news?
I don't want to hear good news. I want to hear the truth.
There's some temporary good news, and that is that meat prices will come down over the next few months. Because
of
the drought.
Because of the drought, yeah. They've got to get rid
so
of the stock.
So the farmers liquidate the herds, and as a result, the meat prices come down. It's a temporary phenomenon that happens with every single drought, and always has done, always will do. But beyond that, then meat prices will rise very rapidly. So if you want to have cheap meat, buy stock up, put it in your freezer, and you'll be okay. But beyond that, I think you're going to see grain prices, because of the drought. Whether it's wheat, whether it's corn, doesn't actually matter. It's going to be very, very expensive. This is one of the worst droughts I've ever seen. And it's not confined to South Africa. You go up to Zambia, for example, and you see
it's
the
bad
impact of that. It's shocking.
Yeah.
The Victoria Falls, you know,
it's a trickle now.
It's an absolute trickle.
Victoria shower.
Yeah, it's dripping.
You know? So as far as food prices are concerned, I think it's going to be very, very tough next year.
And business-wise, entrepreneurs, I mean, what's your prediction on 2016?
I think we're going to see the rand, even though it's weak now, go a bit weaker.
Huh.
Not dramatically so.
Is it like 20 rand to the dollar now? I mean, are we heading that?
Said not dramatically.
We're not going to see that.
Rand.
But I mean, I think let's say we're roughly at 14. We can maybe get to 14 and a half, maybe 15 tops. A lot depends on what happens with sort of so-called emerging markets. Other countries that are similar
the
to
BRICS countries, I suppose.
So
right?
Brazil, for example, which is deeply in recession at this point in time. Mm-hmm. Russia. India's doing very well. India's doing exceptionally well. China's still doing well, but it's growing at maybe 6.5%. Mm. Now, all of their currencies, with the exception of China, which is a different case, they've all been pretty weak in the past year or two.
Right.
And we're following that trend. So we're not doing anything out of the ordinary. In fact, compared to the Turkish lira, for example, or the Brazilian real, we've actually done much, much better. So we're in that kind of middle group. Provided we resist the temptation to shoot ourselves in the foot, you know, scoring own goals by doing dumb political things that are not well received. And hopefully we can avoid things like xenophobic violence, things that are transmitted all over the world in Sky News. I'm just using Sky as an example.
Well, we have to go because we really run out of time. We'll see you next week. The good news is Heineken may has quit. Thank you.
Yay!
We're out of here. Join us again next week. Bye-bye.
Black life is not a color, it's a lifestyle on cliffcentral.com.